Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello and welcome to Catch Up with Louise McSharry. This is a podcast that tries to catch you up on the week, from news to entertainment to an interesting little chat with someone who is relevant to our interests. And we've got a great chat with Shane Daniel Byrne coming up later. If you are on Instagram, you probably know him. He makes hilarious sketches. He is, of course, the originator of Shannon's hair, beauty, nails, and dog grooming on the Lower Kimmage Road. Is that? I feel like I got that wrong. Anyway, you know who I'm talking about. He's so brilliant and he has a new RT Player series. So I got to have a chat with him last week. In terms of this week, I had a good week. I feel like now I've been overdoing it. I don't know about you. It just feels like there's so much on. It's like, I feel like everything we missed over the pandemic has decided to just be on in these 2 months. And so every 2 days there's a gig or a celebration or something. And I'm keeping it quiet this weekend, going to go visit my parents in Wexford and take it easy with the kids for the weekend. And I could not be happier. I need to like never look at any of my friends ever again. I've spent too much time with them over the last couple of weeks. That's not true, but you know what I mean. I need to not socialize for at least a week. I was at Pride over the weekend, which was great. It was just so lovely. Saw so many people that I adore who I hadn't seen in so long. And it was just really nice to see people able to kind of fully do Pride again. I took my kids in the morning, I suppose early afternoon, really, and we watched some of the parade and went to, there was a big event in Merrion Square, went there. Of course, the kids just wanted to go to the playground, which is fine with me. They had done a lot of walking at that stage, and that was really lovely, lovely to get them in and to kind of have interesting conversations with them about what Pride was. I mean, obviously, Ted, who's just turned three, not so much into the conversations, but Sam's nearly six now. So we had a nice conversation about it the night before at dinner, about what Pride is and what it's all about. And when we were at the bus stop about to go into town on the Saturday to head into Pride, I said to him, do you remember what Pride is about? And he said, yeah, it's a celebration so people don't feel lonely. And I thought, I mean, kind of. Like, not exactly right, but a beautiful place to start. So I was delighted that we managed to get in. And then Gordon came and got the kids. He'd been working in the morning and I went and socialized in an adult capacity and was bopping around the town. And as I said, it was just nice to see people able to do it properly again. Now, unfortunately, there was yet another attack on a queer person. In this case, it was several queer people as they were celebrating Pride on Saturday in Stephen's Green. And you know, it's really worrying. We've had such a series of attacks on gay, trans and queer people in Dublin of late. It would make you think that we have a real problem that we need to face up to. And, you know, these attacks are exactly the reason that PJ Kirby was fundraising. As you may have heard on the podcast a few episodes ago, he was raising money to try and assist LGBT Ireland in hiring someone who could specifically support people who have these kind of experiences. And I'm delighted to say that he reached his target this week. So if you're someone who donated, I really can't thank you enough. I know PJ's very grateful. I'm delighted for him. It was a great idea and great that this person is going to be hired soon and will be there as a support. I mean, obviously terrible that we need it, but I'm positive that it's happening. In other news this week, I committed a serious parenting fail. If you have children in your vicinity, maybe skip the next minute or so, because what happened was my son lost a tooth, his second tooth, and I forgot to do the exchange that happens after bedtime, if you know what I mean, under the pillow. And so he woke up the next morning and was devastated. Now, I'm quick on my feet. So I was like, look, she obviously had a busy night. You know, she's not as fast as Santa. She doesn't have the speed that Santa has. So if a lot of kids need a visit, then, you know, she can't get around to all of them. So she'll probably just come tonight. And he was happy with that. And that's what I did. But I felt terrible. Like, I felt like I'd ruined everything. Like, I was a bad mother. It didn't matter. You know, all of the things that had come before, none of that mattered because I had failed him. And I was lying there just feeling so terrible about it. And then, you know, I was texting my friends. I was like, oh, and you know, you go into such a kind of self-flagellation phase in these moments when you feel like you've done something wrong as a parent. And my friend Sophie said to me, she was right. She said, you know, all of those feelings that we have as mothers are linked to our own kind of previous trauma or challenges that we've had or ways in which we feel like we failed our children previously or maybe even been failed by our own parents. She was like, you know, all the layers of difficulty and challenges that you have feed into these moments where you feel like you're a failure and your kid is never giving them that much thought. And I was like, that is a very good point. So I chose to forgive myself. We're moving on, and I just wanted to mention it just to encourage you, if you find yourself in a situation like that, to forgive yourself as well, because we can't get it right all of the time. It's absolutely impossible. Anyway, let's get into our catch up on the week, and we will start with the news. Aoife Moore, political correspondent of the Irish Examiner. Hello to you, my friend.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining me once again. How are you?
We're back together in real life.
I know. Isn't it lovely?
Great. Yeah. No, it's been a couple of weeks. Zoom's not the same.
It's not.
You can't see me in my pajamas.
And that's why I drive across the city.
Exactly.
To be here. That's not true. I come from the north side to the north side. But it feels like I'm driving across
the city.
It's
very far, to be fair.
Anyway, we've got loads to talk about. We actually really have loads to talk about. So there's no time for chit-chat. Let's start with the case of the murder of Sophie Toscan de Plantier. Big news this week.
Yeah, so the Gardaí announced yesterday that they will be conducting a full review into the murder of Sophie Toscan de Plantier. As we know, this has been an ongoing saga, really, really hard for the family in France. This has been going on since the 90s. We know from numerous news stories and documentaries and podcasts that the Gardaí were found wanting when it came to this case. It was very clear that the guards involved were not adequately trained or prepared to deal with this kind of case in Scull and West Cork. So they have announced this new full review. It was actually the day before the assistant commissioner of the Gardaí retired. This is the last thing that he announced. They contacted Sophie's family in France and told them. Her son, Jean-Louis, spoke to the Irish Examiner and he said that he was really happy about this. He said he wanted to put it to bed for his family and for the people of West Cork because it has, you know, haunted them for the last 20 odd years. They said that the crime review team will examine the accuracy and credibility of new information. So there was some new information in the two documentaries that came out around the same time. And also another person has come forward allegedly saying that they saw a suspect on the night that it happened. They're also hoping that advances in forensics and DNA will be able to recover some evidence from samples taken at the time. Now, the main suspect is a man called Ian Bailey, who has never been convicted in Ireland. He was convicted in absentia in France, which is a very strange kind of French law that I don't think really stands up to any human rights, because he wasn't there to defend himself. But he has also welcomed this. You know, he wants a chance to clear his name, he said, and he has welcomed the new review. I often wonder if this case had not been, you know, a very wealthy French famous woman, would we still be talking about it this Baron, I don't want to be cynical, and obviously it's great for her family.
Well, no, I think I was listening to the group chat this morning, actually. Zara, Richard, and Gavin's. No, not competitors, friends and colleagues. And they spoke to a reporter who covered the story
Ralph
at the
Regan.
Time. Yeah. And he said, he very quickly kind of mentioned that it became quickly apparent. He mentioned it several times that she was someone who was well connected within the French film industry, mm-hmm. and that she was married to someone who was well connected within the French film industry and in French politics, and in fact was friends with Jacques Chirac. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's interesting how the entire thing is tainted by this sense of she was someone important.
Yeah. And it was because as well, she wasn't from Ireland. So it was as a tourist. So it's nearly worse because we all feel responsible then because they're like, oh, this poor woman came to Ireland for her holidays.
Yeah.
We all do it. Like if something happens to people in Derry on their holidays, I feel like somewhat responsible for them.
Oh, absolutely. We will watch that with interest. It's big, big news. And hopefully there will be peace for the family of Sophie Toscan de Plantier at some stage soon. Now we have to talk about America because like what I mean...
Okay, so this week, or
it doesn't feel like this week, does
no,
it?
No, I know. I was actually like, is it this week?
It is.
The US Supreme Court overturned a 50-year-old ruling called Roe versus Wade, which allowed for terminations and abortions. It was kind of expected, if it's not incredibly disappointing. Basically closed abortion clinics in certain states already. I believe it's 9 states have already banned abortion because they had something called trigger laws, which as soon as Roe versus Wade was overturned, their new law came into effect, which basically all but banned abortion. This has been a campaign in America from the Christian right since Roe versus Wade for 50 years to roll back women's rights. There has been days and days of protests outside the Supreme Court justices' homes. There is now also concerns that the Supreme Court might go after contraception and equal marriage. I was listening to a podcast this week who were saying the states that have already banned abortion, the issue is there is that they all tend to be very close together to one another, their neighbouring states. So if you are a woman seeking abortion, you can go to a different state. Mm. But if you're in one of these states, you might have to cross three or four states to try and seek a termination. Mm. It's a huge, huge step backwards because as we know in this country, and whatever your view of abortion is, you cannot ban abortion. You can only ban safe abortion. Mm. And I find it really interesting that Alva Smith, the campaigner for Repeal the Eighth, was on CNN yesterday explaining what it's like when you ban abortion. And I thought, well, we have totally come full circle.
Yeah.
That now we have Irish people explaining to Americans why their laws are wrong.
Yeah, I've actually written my opinion column for the Irish Independent this week, which comes out on Saturday, is about this. And it's about the America that I spent years in as a child, or what my perception of the America was, because obviously it wasn't perfect, but you know, what it felt like then versus what it feels like now to look at it, because the Supreme Court also made other strange rulings this week.
Yeah, so the Supreme Court also ruled that a high school football coach has the constitutional right to pray in public on the field after games. And this is now seeing... It's legal observers have basically said this is now the country's top court allowing greater state involvement in religion. This is a thing America has always done really well, is that they had a separation of church and state, and now we're seeing that that is no longer the case. And it is because in America, their judiciary is completely politicized. So Democrats appoint judges, Republicans appoint judges. And for years, Republicans have been so much better playing this game than the Democrats. The Supreme Court is now packed with Republican judges who, in my view, lied during their confirmation hearings said...
Not just in your view, in many people's
view. In their confirmation hearings, they were asked, what is your opinion on Roe v. Wade? What is your opinion on church and state? And they said that they wouldn't interfere with constitutional rights. And now we have this. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the Democrat senator, she said that she believes that they should be called to testify because they have lied. In their confirmation hearings, they misled the people who confirmed them. It's incredibly depressing, and women will die.
It's heartbreaking.
And it's also not politically, or it's also not publicly popular. Like, a recent poll, like this Sunday, suggested that 59% of Americans disapprove of the Supreme Court ruling. So it's not even a Democrat-Republican issue. It has just become a Democrat-Republican issue, but publicly, the American public support abortion rights.
59% still doesn't feel like enough to me, though, to be honest. It just feels like a total misunderstanding of why women get abortions and why abortion is crucial. Like, the most of the states have exceptions that are yeah. There's 26 states which are likely to ban abortion as a result of this, and most of them have exceptions for things like incest, for things like rape, for things like where the woman's life is in danger. Some don't.
Yep. And also, who's proven that it's rape? I mean, we know how horrific and awful it can be to try and get anyone to believe a woman when it comes to rape. I would want to know how one is designating that.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on. Now, this is good news because interesting movements in Ireland. As we said, it feels like the United States is going backwards and we actually are progressing, because this week there was an announcement about free contraception for women aged 17 to 25 and some positive news about the school curriculum.
So a €31 million health package for women was announced on Tuesday, and it's access to free contraception for those aged between 17 and 25, and it's going to be provided from August. This is great. This was a recommendation from the committee on the repeal of the Eighth Amendment, because as we know, we didn't just want, you know, women's bodily autonomy, but we wanted access to contraception so we can ensure that people who don't need to have abortions don't have them. Universal contraception is something that the Women's Council have been campaigning for a long time, but they say 17 to 25 is a great place to start, because it was noted in the committee that people aged 17 to 25, cost was the biggest barrier for them to access in contraception. And it is expensive. You know, I personally know I can't get a repeat prescription for the pill. So I have to pay €60 to go to the doctor every time I need the pill. And then, so that's €60. And then the cost of the pill on top of that. Now, it's okay because I can afford it, but not everyone can.
But also, even if you remove the financial burden, which it absolutely would be a burden for most people of that age, you know, at 17, you know, you might have to ask your parents to help you, and that might not be a conversation that you want to have.
And it's private, and like, and it's a private matter anyway. So yeah, this is great. I mean, condoms are free at sexual health clinics and everything else, so they don't need a prescription. But yeah, 17 to 25, and it starts in August. And then we'd also some more good news for women this week, so that they're changing the school curriculum. So they're going to include things like consent, domestic violence, and coercive control. So this is all part of Helen McEntee, the Minister for Justice. This is her new domestic, sexual, and gender-based violence strategy that she announced this week. This has been, you know, talked about for a really long time. But it means now under this that curriculums for both primary and secondary school will be updated. And they'll include consent, coercive control, and safe use of the internet. It's to teach, you know, young people about image-based sexual abuse, all that sort of stuff. And it's, they're going to be training teachers and how to teach kids about this. And it'll come into effect in the junior cycle in September 2023, so that's next year, and senior cycle 2024. And the anti-bullying procedures are going to be updated as well. This is incredibly good news.
Such good news. Such good news. And I know there will be people who'll be like, you can't talk to primary school students about those things. But you can. You talk to them in an age-appropriate way. I'm teaching my kids about consent now. I've been teaching them about consent for years. Because what I teach them is, you're in charge of your body and I'm in charge of my body. And you don't get to touch someone else's body if they don't want you to. And you have to ask. And if I ask my son for a hug and he says no, I accept that. If, you know, if I want to give him a kiss, I say, can I give you a smooch? Like, it's little things like that. It doesn't have to be a big, sexy conversation, you know? I just think this is the best.
I was just thinking about it this morning, and I never even heard the word consent through university.
I don't think I did either.
I'm only 31, and, like, the only mention of consent that came into my life, I was, like, definitely in my late 20s. It's depressing.
Like, we can change this culture.
Oh, absolutely. And I think people are waking up to this. I think fellas especially are waking up to this.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so yay. Hopefully we're going to have a really good and healthy next generation of men. Now, let's talk about Scottish independence.
Yes. This is very much in my wheelhouse.
Shocking.
So I was a journalist working in Glasgow during the last independence referendum. So I feel like, we've come full circle. So Scotland's First Minister, SNP leader Nicola Sturgeon, made a statement on Tuesday. She sent a personal email to the party's 120,000 members. That's a lot of members, just FYI. We'll put it this way, there's 120,000 members in of the SNP. Scotland's the same size as Ireland, and Sinn Féin have about 20,000.
Wow, okay. Yeah.
So they are like very deeply deeply popular. So she told MSPs that the Scottish government wants to stage a second independence referendum on the 19th of October 2023, using the same question as put to voters in 2014, should Scotland be an independent country? So there is some issues with this. She technically can't call an independence referendum without Westminster's approval, and she hasn't got it. So she has written to Boris Johnson and said that she's requested that Westminster give Holyrood the legal powers to legislate for another vote under the Scotland Act. But the UK government obviously don't want this. They've basically said, no, is not the time. Cost of living crisis, Ukraine, everything else is going on. It'll have to go to the Supreme Court. That's unlikely to happen this summer because of the recess. So, which, if it doesn't go to the Supreme Court, that can interfere when she wants to have the vote.
Mm.
I would also say, just from my own like personal knowledge, Nicola Sturgeon is under a lot of pressure from her party members. They really want independence.
Mm.
She has to be seen to be doing something.
Yeah.
The thing is, she said during the last election, if the SNP won again, we go back into government again, that's a mandate to call another referendum because we campaign on the fact that we want independence, and if they're voting for us,
that's what they want.
That's what they want. Mm. The people say that that's not really a mandate because, you know, elections are different from referendums, all that sort of stuff. So it is politically risky, but she was so close the last time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 2023.
And then if Scotland became independent, then would they apply for
European Union status straight away.
And would they get it more quickly than another?
I don't know about more quickly, but it has been talked about quite a lot. And like the main players in Europe, Spain, Ireland, Germany and France, I don't think I've mentioned it, but they've said, that they would take them back.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be gas?
Because the whole point during the Scottish independence referendum the first time was like, if we go independent, we'll lose our place in the European Union. And then
that's gone anyway.
For Brexit anyway. So wow. Now the and Scottish people want to be back in the European Union. So
wow. Okay. Well, this is going to be very exciting to watch no matter what happens. Aoife Moore, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I have been a diehard Shane Daniel Byrne fan since he started posting his brilliant, hilariously accurate, it has to be said, sketches on Instagram during the pandemic. Now that the world is back in action, he is back on stage doing stand-up and he's doing loads of other bits as well, as he should be. I feel like he should be hired by everyone, including a new series for the RT Player, which is called Love Bites. He was so kind and welcomed me into his home last week so that we could chat about it. Shane Daniel Byrne, to use your full name. Now, is that a name that you're using or is it just like an Instagram?
It's now my name that I mostly called, but it's my middle name. Daniel's my middle name.
Yeah. So,
and someone the other day, someone I knew from years ago, I bumped into her Body and Soul and she got a phone call. She's like, yeah, I'll be there in 1 sec. I just bumped into Shane Byrne. And I was like, oh, that sounds weird. I was like, because she's from the past. So it's really, because she knows me. Obviously, my name is Shane Byrne.
Yeah.
But yeah, my name everywhere else. My name on all my stuff, my driving test and passport and all is Shane Daniel Byrne because my dad wanted the Daniel. My mother wanted Shane. She wins. Fair.
Obviously.
That's a fair thing. Yeah. She had all her boys natural, Louise.
Oh.
All her boys. Just gas and air. All boys natural. not that she goes on about it, but...
Well, to be honest, she was missing out. The epidural was the best thing that ever happened to me.
I'd love one of them sometimes.
Oh my
sometimes.
God. Honestly, I remember the second... Well, my second child, I said to Gordon, I was like, I just want you to experience this because I was just so delighted to have
You're
it.
Just having a buzz?
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, nice. Fair play to your mom.
Yeah, no, she did a great job. Well done to her. So I kind of started putting it in before, but then there's a Shane Byrne rugby player, and if you Google Shane Byrne, you get him. So it was also a PR choice as well.
A good one, I think. It's got a bit of like gravitas or something.
It sounds nice when you're doing comedy and people introduce you on stage and say, "Your next act, give it up for Shane Daniel Byrne." It sounds a lot better than Shane Byrne.
Yeah.
Yeah, I learned that's more spondaic syllables. In its rhyming and its meter. Shane Byrne is a sponday. Shane Daniel Byrne is something else. I don't know. I briefly stopped by college for a while.
Conversation has transcended my level of ability. So I'm so delighted to chat to you. I'm such a fan of yours. There is no two ways about it. Like, every time your little face pops up in my Instagram stories, I'm like, yes, Shane's done some stories.
But it's rarer and rarer now.
Yes, you really are. You're not there very often.
I
know.
I feel guilty about it. I feel like I'm neglecting the internet, and I owe a lot to the people from the internet. But I feel like I'm neglecting it. But it's only so much as things are back now,
yeah,
and comedy's on and events are on and stuff is happening in festivals, that it's like there's only so much room in your brain for new jokes.
Yeah.
So that it's like it gets impossible. So I feel do you know when you go through like, I don't know, sometimes you're like, I'm great at this, and you're like, I'll do a little gag, whatever, and this will go well. And then sometimes you're like, I can't, I'm not putting myself on the internet. Everyone will see that.
Yeah.
It's like, if I post that, people will look at it and they'll all unfollow me and they hate me, they're sick of me. I don't know. At the moment, I'm in the down buzz of that, whatever that is, the downward half of that. But yeah, it'll come back again. I've learned that now. You just have to, another one will come. Another video will come, and don't worry about it.
You said there that you owe a lot to the people of the internet, and I suppose you kind of do, but at the same time, you have to deliver the goods to get the response. And you really delivered the goods during lockdown. Like, so many laughs. What kind of inspired you to start making those videos?
I was just doing, I can't remember what I used to do on Instagram before I had people who followed me on Instagram, when I just had my own friends, whatever. I obviously used to mess or whatever, but I can't remember. But I think it was just as things were happening, I think there's something to do with when things are scary and serious that you do want a bit of relief without making, I mean, there's a way of, I always said that during the heyday of the sketch guys on the internet, whatever, and girls, guys was a gender neutral term in that instance.
Thank you, Shane.
But during that, it was like, when it was like the heyday of it, COVID is not funny, but how we all behaved was quite funny.
Yeah.
And that our lives went really weird.
Yeah.
So I think it was fun to take the piss out of us and how we were doing it and various things and mams on Zooms and trying to teach. Like, I did a character called Kira's Mom.
Kira's Mom is my favorite. I know everybody loves Shannon, and I love Shannon, but Kira's Mom, for me, just it hits me so hard. It's just so real. I can't go.
But that, I made that.
I can hear, like, Kira love. I can hear Kira, it.
Yeah, so she was like a posh mom trying to organize, sending a video message for some reason. I don't, it makes no sense. But about lockdown, the week lockdown started, and the Irish Times cover was Stay Home. It was a big fancy cover when major global events are happening.
Yeah.
But I had also tried to show my mother a FaceTime, and you, no, I don't know why they don't understand. I'm like, if you point that phone at you, it will see you. And she just kept disappearing further and further down the screen. It's like, just because you can see me doesn't mean I can see you.
Yeah.
Your camera is on. I don't know. But that was funny. I mean, she's well able for it now. She's an early adopter. Enough about my mother. God, she's taking up all the time on the podcast. God, whatever, I'm sick of her.
But I get what you're saying. Like, we needed a bit of levity. Mm. And so there was a real appetite for any kind of relief. And your characters, I mean, as we said, Shannon, like, has Shannon taken over your life a little bit? People became really obsessed with her.
She did for a while. I mean, people will often say, every now and then someone will comment on that video and go, oh my God, more of this, or just seeing this now, or people still
just
ask
seeing
for
this
it.
Now.
Yeah, I don't know. They came later on, because I didn't want to do too many of that character.
Yeah.
When I did Shannon, it was because Shannon's a beautician who was anti-COVID, anti-lockdown, anti-everything, anti-mask. And when I did that, it was because that week we were talking about going back to level 5 or something.
Yeah.
And there was lads saying, oh, open the gyms, good for mental health.
Yeah.
And women saying the beauty is good for mental health. And those things are all true. Yes, it is. Does make you feel good to go and get your hair done, your nails done, go work out. Yes, but also people might die of COVID-19 if we open them.
Yeah.
So I didn't like the blending in mental health for, I hate any kind of thrown in mental health.
Yeah.
I hate a lot of mental health discourse, to be honest. I mean, I support people with mental health difficulties or mental distress of any kind, but I don't like throwing it in as kind of a little badge that you can throw on and tack on and say that. So I thought, that's a comedian's job, is to make fun of that. But I had no idea it was going to happen. It was going to blow up like that.
Yeah.
Or that I'd get 10,000 or 11,000 people follow me that afternoon. I didn't expect that.
Is that what happened?
That's what happened. And then you have to go, you immediately must go, okay, internet guy now, that's it. So there was some videos before and I gained a little bit of following, like a couple hundred, who were strangers to me.
Yeah.
And then when Shannon happened, it was like overnight, absolutely nuts.
It was what did it feel like the next time you posted?
I think I posted something saying hello, because I was like, I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'll do another Shannon video. But then I was too scared. I was like, oh God, I can't. It's a difficult second album.
Yeah.
But actually, I think that fear was useful, because I could have gone down the line of just keep doing Shannon every day or something. And then you'd be a Shannon guy, and then you'd disappear. But I think being scared was actually helpful, because then it was like, just do something else instead.
Yeah.
Don't be worried with the pressure of, will that second Shannon be as funny as the first one?
Yeah, because that's the thing. Like, I mean, as a lot of people emerged over the last few years as people who do kind of funny sketches on Instagram or whatever. In my opinion, the best ones are the ones who are changing it up. Like, yeah. some of the stuff is funny, but like eventually you get to the stage where you're like, okay, I've seen this video that you're making, 500 times. It's actually just the same joke over and over again. Mm. But like, you know, someone like, say, Cillian Sunderman, like, you just never know who he's going to be, Cillian, or what the situation is going to be like.
He is the crown prince and we all look to him, you know, he is the leader, he's in charge.
Why does he get to be attractive as well? Like, and I think that is
and
wrong.
You know what? He's really nice.
I know he is. I've met him. Nice. He's so nice.
Yeah, it's really gross. Like, I don't know how he gets too much. Maybe there's a secret. I don't know. We'll see.
Or maybe his downfall is coming. Not hoping for that. Just saying.
I'm not manifesting it, but it would be good to see him suffer a little bit.
But it does seem like there's a really like a lovely kind of camaraderie between most of the people who are doing the kind of stuff that you guys were doing during the pandemic. Like, I know you guys and Tony Horror have obviously done stuff together. Mm. And then there's like Michael Fry, Emma Doran. Like, all of you guys seem to have a good vibe going.
Yeah, there's a really nice part of when people were enjoying our videos and having fun at that, we were also tick-tacking with each other and chatting to each other. Tick-tack. And I felt, is that not okay? Tick-tacking.
I love it.
I felt that was kind of a nice, I mean, the videos and all the fuss was fun, antidote to the monotony of lockdown. But I think it was also nice for me. I enjoyed the new connections that I had on the internet. We were all talking so much. And there's some I haven't met yet. I haven't met Ryan Carrick yet.
Oh, yeah.
I just messaged him yesterday. I was like, because I saw he's at Body and Soul. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't see your Body and Soul. And he's like, I have a feeling it'll be very soon. But it's like, yeah, people that you haven't, we've lots of us have met now and done things together.
Yeah.
And that's been really fun. And we got on so well.
Yeah.
And that's just, what a treat. Like, you couldn't ask for anything
it's
better.
Great.
No one was annoying. Like, we worked on this.
So far.
We worked on the breakfast show.
I was just going to mention that. GUTF.
GUTF, which stands for Get Up To... Can you say fuck on this podcast?
You fucking can.
Fuck it. So we did that. We did it actually ages ago. Last October we shot that.
Really?
Yeah, so it's only come to light now. But it's very hard. When you suddenly have a professional setup, then you have to do a professional edit. Somebody has to be there in person for the edit. Tony was there. Tony's kind of leading that project. I say kind of, he was leading that project. Tony Campbell. So it's been so nice to come out and the response has been really nice. But we did that over 2 days. It was me, Michael Fry, Justine Stafford, Emma Doran, Tony Cantwell, Cillian Sunderman, Martin Angolo, who's more of a stand-up comedian than an online... he's not an online comedian at all, but he's a great stand-up. Peter McGann. I think that's everybody.
It's so funny.
But it really is. It was so fun to do. We had such a good time and everybody got on so well. We did it. We wrote it together and all pitched in on each other's ideas. And it was just, it just flowed really nicely. It was actually like at certain points we had to rein ourselves in because it was too funny.
Yeah.
We were having too much fun. It was like, okay, well, like, and the guys who were shooting it were like, you're going to have to call cut at some point because you can't just keep messing. And we just couldn't stop. And then we'd be laughing about how we were laughing. And we'd like, because it was a tight timeline or whatever. But it was a dream. And the response has been really nice to that, actually.
Yeah.
So it's nice to do something. It's 9 minutes long, the first episode. There's more coming. There's three more. But it's been nice to try something that's longer than a 60-second video and have people still enjoy it. So, yeah, that's been a really fun one.
I've seen a lot on all of your various Instagrams and social media accounts. I've seen a lot of people going, oh, come on, RTE, like, would you put them on the telly? And there's always a lot of kind of discussion around RTE. And I think ever since Father Ted about, you know, whether RTE does enough to kind of embrace Irish comedians and Irish comedy. But you have a new project with RTE, which is out now. So tell us about that.
There's been a couple, we just launched it. It's a show called Love Bites, where I get to go on dates with well-known faces.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a chicken fillet roll together. We curate each other's chicken fillet roll, so I choose the filling for the date. And it's generally
interesting.
Yeah,
I missed the filling bit.
Oh yeah, that's the big thing. So we try it out. So I was a bit nervous actually about that because I was like, I'm not a picky eater, but I don't want, like, I'm not eating a roll if it's got raw tomato in there. I'm not eating it.
Or like what if someone put tuna on your chicken?
Well, I put tuna in someone's the other day.
Shame.
Which apparently, I know, yeah, but it kind of made sense. Anyway, he liked it. It was for Conor Ryan. He ate a lot of his roll and a lot of mine. So he was really into the rolls. Yeah, so it's kind of generally we have like a fun chat about dating, and then part of like being a person who has a big internet following and what that's like, and does it change your dating habits and things. But it's been really fun, and we had Michael Fry, Miss Ireland, Pamela Uba, and
she's amazing.
Oh, she's great.
I'm in love with her.
Yeah, she's also was taught us on the set. She's a scientist as well.
Yeah.
So she went
casual like.
Yeah, yeah. She went from working like in hospital setting in labs to going around in the thick of COVID. Then she was Miss Ireland, so she went to Miss World, or I'm not sure which one it is.
Miss World.
Miss Universe is the Donald Trump one. She wasn't in that one.
Yeah.
She wasn't the Trump one.
Miss World
she
went to anyway, yeah.
Yeah, but she was telling us all about like how the COVID is going to change and all the things. So it was like really weird that like she's the beauty queen star, Miss Ireland, our princess, but also has all this knowledge and information. So she was just real chill about the COVID. She's like, yeah, it'll just keep getting lower and lower. The virus doesn't want to kill us. It wants to survive. And I was like, but how does the virus know it's killing us? I was like, absolutely obsessed. Yeah.
Yeah, she's great. So obviously you had loads of fun making that then.
It was so fun. I was really scared. Like I've learned now to kind of try not to be so scared. Things generally go well.
Yeah.
So every time I've tried something new, like I did a bit on Dear and Gary, he had a show at the end of 2020 on called Reeling in the Fears that Joanne McNally wrote.
Oh yeah, I remember, yeah.
And I did a Shannon sketch on that and I was absolutely terrified going into that. Like, I can't even explain. Like, I had pain in my back. If I'm stressed, my lower back is, like, gone.
Yeah.
And I could not move. And then, literally, I left the studio and I sat in the car. And I was like, I feel absolutely fine. It was like, I was so stressed. And I was like a big loser. I wasn't cool at all. When it finished, they were like, okay, that's everything. That's great. And I was like, is it finished? And they were like, yeah. I was like, oh, thanks so much. Everybody was so nice. I was really scared. Like a big loser. I was like a big sap. And then they all clapped. I was like, oh, my God, mortified for
myself.
That
sounds like you were just a lovely person.
I guess. Maybe I'm lovely or whatever. But no, not that I'm cool and showbiz now or something, but I just was like, I was just get so terrified. So I've learned not to be as scared before the thing. Nerves are important. Nerves are part of a stand-up's life. It's part of it comes with the territory. But I'm like, it's also such a waste of energy sometimes to be stressed over something for a week and feel sick about something that's coming
that
up.
Level. Yeah. Especially when like, I mean, I think this is what you're saying is that the more you do, the more you realize, oh, I'm good at this. Like I can do this. This is like, if someone asks me to do something, it's because they see that I'm able to do it.
Yeah. And you have to take, for me anyway, when something goes well, there's a brief window where I'll allow myself to go, that went really well. I did a really good job. And I have to kind of, I usually like tell my boyfriend it or text him after the thing and say, it went really great. I texted him one day after a stand-up gig, and I was like, I'm really good at this, because I have to express it. Otherwise, I'll instantly forget it and go like, you're crap, you're the worst, you're ugly, whatever. All those things that we do to ourselves. So yeah, I think it's good to take stock immediately after.
Yeah.
Because it goes away. Same with a bad gig. If the gig goes bad, you can't dwell on it for too long. Mm. You just got to move on pretty quickly.
And how are you finding the stand-up gigs now, kind of now that you're internet man, as you said? Are they different? Is the vibe different?
Well, I'm being offered much bigger gigs than I would have had before. Like, so I toured with, I supported Tony Cantwell on his tour. And then like there was one, they did these gigs just as things were opening back up in 2021, they had these mixed bills in Vicar Street.
Mm.
So one of my first gigs back, having 2 years off or whatever it was, or a year and a half, was Vicar Street, which I'd obviously never played before. And like, so terrifying, so nerve wracking. You're like, how is this possible? But then it really was boosted, but everybody in the audience was so up for it because everyone's like, we're out.
Yeah.
We don't have masks on. I think masks came back a bit after that or something. I can't forget. But there was no masks. Everyone was just really up for a good time. And then you're like, this is really cool rock and roll. When the gig goes well, it was like, I don't know, it stands out as like, that was like a major moment in my life. It was like, don't mind your comedy career. It was like, that was really special.
Yeah.
So the gigs have been bigger and you kind of have to just go, yeah, this is fine. I'm able for this.
Yeah.
If I could use a crude, what I say to about comedy is very macho, whatever. And sometimes you have to just go, you know what? My dick is big enough.
Yeah.
You have to tell yourself, that's a very male, cisgendered, male-centered way of thinking of it. So pardon the metaphor, but that you have to just go, yeah, of course. Of course, that's no problem.
Yeah.
I'm gonna just be able to do this. And then you also are. You also are.
I have a rule. I made a rule for myself about probably 5 years ago that like, being scared wasn't enough of a reason not to do something.
Yeah.
That like, you know, you can say no to opportunities or no to whatever if your reasoning is that you actively don't want to do it, as long as it's not because you're scared. Because you will miss brilliant opportunities if you let that kind of fear stop you. And it does get easier.
Yeah, just be scared. I think Justine Stafford was talking about feeling the sense of imposter syndrome on Twitter. And then I then I think, yeah, who was it telling me? Oh yeah, somebody wrote back to him and was like, just keep doing the gigs until someone tells you you're not good enough, until someone says that, and it's never going to happen. But I think you do have to just be scared. I think that's it. You just go, I've been scared of things before that are actually like in your life, frightening things happen, upsetting things happen, grief happens, and you get through those things. Yeah. I always think grief is a handy thing to look back on, because when things are difficult, because that thing of you don't get cured from grief. You just add it into the texture and of your life and the thread of your life. You say, that's here. And I think fear is a bit like that. You're like, there's going to be fear. It's part of the tapestry, and you just got to keep going. So it's something like that.
Yeah. So gig-wise, what do you have going on at the moment? Where can people see you?
So at the moment, it's festivally. So I just did Body and Soul. I'll be going to Other Side Festival in July. I'll be at Electric Picnic as well. And then Pride will have already happened when this happened. But tomorrow I'm going to Pride for 2 days, hosting stage in the Mother Bride Block Party.
That's exciting.
Yeah, that is exciting. I've never done anything kind of very Pride-ish. So it feels kind of cool to be part of the gang. Now I'm Grandmam and Panty are hosting the main stage. So fine, whatever. You can go to them if you want.
Those aren't Grandmam guys, if they weren't so nice.
They are so...
Again, good looking, funny,
hot,
talented.
Cool dudes with cool clothes.
Yeah.
Comfortable in themselves. I don't know, they're too much
and lovely
me. They're really nice.
They're so nice.
They're really nice, but they're really clever boys as well.
It used to be that hot people at least had the good grace to be horrible
or keep their mouth shut. You know what I mean? They talk a lot.
Stop shoving it down our throats.
And I let them do it. Yeah, have they not? The good grace is the best.
I've let them do it, and I'll let them do it again.
No, but for a gig, now the best thing coming up now is the Paddy Power Comedy Festival in Ivy Gardens. That's the 21st to 24th of July. And I'm gigging every single day at that, which is really exciting. So I'm doing 5 gigs at that. The last time it was on was 2019, and I did 1 gig. And that was completely wild that I was there. I did a play in the Abbey, and as part of the play, it was like a 4-hour long durationally modern thing. And then part of the play, do you like the way I dropped in the Abbey as if it's not a big deal?
It was so casual.
Darling, I was doing a play in the National and whatever. And I did stand up in the interval, and it made sense. It was my stand up. It made sense as part of the thing. And I knew so little that I did a new set every single night. I made up new jokes every day, which is completely insane to me now. And then the promoters from the comedy festival saw that and were like, do you want to do a gig? And I was like, yeah, okay. I'd never even been to it. I'd never even been at it. So I was like, it was like my 10th gig. I was doing it in Ivy Gardens, and there was like, Catherine Cohn was on the bill, who then went and won the Best Newcomer in Edinburgh, and she has a Netflix special, and Foylands and Hogg, it was like, and Bernard Casey, it was like all these people who are around years and doing things. And I was like, yeah, me too. And Kevin McGarren was hosting it, who then ushered me around and took me under his wing then for the rest of the festival and told me, do this. Yeah, I love Kevin McGarren.
And are you still doing the acting, or is the main focus comedy now?
Comedy is the main focus. I mean, I don't know. I was never very successful as an actor.
You were in the Abbey.
Yeah, I mean, I did bits. Yeah, no, sure, I did bits. I would like to go do it, but I think more being in a play is not as attractive to me at the moment because being on stage doing comedy is way more... You get more from it. It's juicier. It's exciting. So
and you're in charge.
And you're in charge. Now that's you're also very lonely. So there's I miss the idea of having castmates and having to being in an ensemble. So I miss that. But yeah, I think I would like to do film and TV more. And not that there's offers coming my way or anything, but
there should be.
You know, well, maybe we'll see. Yeah. I mean, I'm throwing out. I mean, I do a few auditions here and there. But yeah, so that would be more attractive to me now than doing a play. But I would like to get back into it. But at the moment, comedy is just, it's very frightening and stressful, but it's also very fulfilling. When it goes well, it's very enriching.
Yeah.
And it's you have to be careful of it because it's a bit of a drug. You know what I mean? It's like, you can see why people get involved in drugs because they're like, keep this going.
Yeah.
They do a 20 minutes that goes well. They're like, get a bag. Like people are like, going for it. Like I can totally see how that happens to people.
Yeah.
So, but I'm very careful around all that carry on. I don't even have a drink before the gig or anything like that. So because it's a bad habit.
It is. Yeah. I think that's a good shout.
A crutch, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, look, it's great to see you doing so well.
Thank you very much.
People can see Love Bites on the RTE player. Yep. Get Up to Fuck is on Tony's...
Yeah, it's on Tony Horror's YouTube, or Tony Catmull. I called him Tony Horror because you did. Tony Catmull's YouTube, but we'll be posting on Instagram and Twitter and all the rest of it as well. And then the Ivy Gardens is 21st to 24th of July.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much, Shane Daniel Byrne.
And thank you, because you were an early sharer of my things on the internet.
Oh, so stop.
A high profile share goes a long way. So
I live to share. When a thing is good, it deserves to be seen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Some weeks, the news from the world of entertainment is light and breezy, and other weeks, it's really not. This week, we have a little bit of breeze in the form of some chats about two films on the horizon, Greta Gerwig's Barbie, I can't wait, and the new Hocus Pocus film. But we have some serious matters to discuss first. Writer and co-author of the Aisling books, Emer McGlysett, joined me to shepherd us through the week's events. Emer McGlysett, thank you so much for joining me once again on the podcast. I am thrilled to have you here. We've got loads to talk about, lots of fun stuff, but we're going to start with something that's a little bit dark, but also largely positive in terms of the result.
Yeah, well put. We have the news this week that R. Kelly has been sentenced to 30 years in prison. He's been sentenced for racketeering and sex trafficking, which are obviously stemming from his kind of coincidentally 30 years long campaign of abuse against young women, some young men, and it's kind of, he's finally got his comeuppance. Mm. So like, I only really came to the knowledge that R. Kelly was like a bad man, like not that long ago, I feel. Mm. It has been in kind of the consciousness for a long time. I mean, famously, he married Aaliyah when she was 15. That was an illegal marriage, but he, you know, pieces were written about him back then. That was kind of the mid-90s. Mm. Since then, he has had so many, particularly girls who were young at the time, come out and accuse him of sexual assault, of rape, of sex trafficking, all of this. And his career, up until a few years ago, has kind of carried on regardless. Yeah. Like, he sang at the 2002 Olympics. Now, I know that's 20 years ago, but it was well known at the time that he, you know, was not a good guy.
Yeah, Lady Gaga did a song with him only about 10 years ago.
Yeah, Justin Bieber has collaborated with him. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot that he has gotten away with in terms of career, even though it was known. And I mean, this is no surprise. We've seen this happen again and again and again. And around the time of Me Too, I think that was when I really became aware, because everyone knows his famous song remixed to Ignition, and we used to play that at parties. Yeah. And like, it was a big hit and everyone loved it. And then around the time of Me Too, it was like, scrub it off your playlists, can't play it anymore. He's a really bad guy. There's a Netflix documentary series called Surviving R. Kelly, which is really horrific.
Yeah.
But anyway, in court in Brooklyn this week, he has been sentenced to 30 years in prison. And there's another criminal trial against him coming up in August in Chicago. And that's a federal trial. And he's likely to be sentenced there again to another large amount of time in prison.
It's great that he's finally being punished, but I mean, I think we're all, certainly people of our generation, I think, are grappling with the fact that probably somewhere in the back of our head, we knew vaguely that he was not a good man, or that there were stories about him or whatever. And I mean, I'll speak for myself. I kind of just ignored it, yeah, or like chose not to think about it or something. And I find that hard to kind of stomach now. And I think maybe that's partially because we've all, I mean, if you pardon the pun, like, we've all woken up in terms of what's acceptable behavior, what's not acceptable behavior. But I still struggle to think that I was just willing to ignore these stories. I suppose we didn't know the details.
Yeah.
And we didn't know any specifics. And the specifics of this are horrendous.
They really are, yeah.
Like, the more I read, the worse it gets. You know, the stories that were in the documentary series are awful. I mean, you had teenagers who basically had been manipulated and turned against their parents. Mm-hmm. Parents going to look for their daughters, finding them, only to have their daughters say they didn't want to come home, you know.
Yeah.
Like, young teenagers, like 15-year-olds, really awful, awful stuff. But then some of the stuff in the reporting of this particular verdict or sentencing are even worse than what we've seen before. I mean, there's one piece of an article that I read that said that there was, you know, two guys who'd gone to kind of train with him in a boxing gym, and he clicked his fingers and two girls came out from under the boxing ring and performed sexual favors on these two guys who were there.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, slaves.
Yeah, and I think that's the sex trafficking charge. And there's people, I think, probably saying, why isn't he being accused of more? Like, when you say sex trafficking, and racketeering was the other one, which is kind of fraudulent business practices. And you say, but what about sex with underage girls, yeah, and child pornography? That case in Chicago is going to be about federal charges for child pornography and for luring minors for, yeah, underage sex.
Yeah.
So that is even, I think, still probably, to come, I mean, sex trafficking. We saw Ghislaine Maxwell sentenced to 20 years this year for sex trafficking. So that's a really serious charge. And what that is him bringing these girls together to act basically as slaves, and taking them from their families, from their homes, wherever, whatever. And essentially what Ghislaine Maxwell was doing for Jeffrey Epstein. There were 45 witnesses against R. Kelly in this trial. 11 of them were victims, and I think it included a couple of male victims as well. So it was largely young women and girls, but not all.
And it has to be said, like, massive respect to those people. It is not easy to come forward and speak like that. I read some of the testimony. There was one woman who was testifying, and after she said a specific element of what had happened to her, apparently Orr Kelly and his lawyer were kind of whispering, and she stopped speaking. And then she said, I'm not going to interrupt his conversation, yeah, and, yeah, waited for them to stop before she carried on. And just the strength of that woman.
So powerful. Like, and I mean, there had been cases against him before. There was one in 2008, a criminal trial, which is that famous video of him having underage sex with a girl. Yeah. It was the one kind of everyone knew about and heard about. But again, his career still carried, yeah, on. And that trial ultimately collapsed because the girl involved didn't want to testify. And who could blame her?
No.
And I know you were saying there about us kind of, oh, I mean, us collectively kind of, you know, going, oh, putting our heads in the sand about it. I feel, for me anyway, when you're younger and more ignorant, you might do something like that. I feel like as I've gotten older and I hear things about people I've liked, say Louis C.K., like I really liked him back, you know, 10, 12 years ago. But the first inkling that he, you know, bad stuff, I was like, I'm out. I'm, yeah, not a fan, you know. And I think
as well, probably when you're younger, you're like, gosh, you're 15, you're practically a grown up, but you're not.
Yeah, you don't really understand the complexities, no, of it, I think.
And the power imbalance.
It feels very far away as well. Yeah. But the judge in this case, she talked about the hundreds of enablers that were around him.
I think it kind of draws a line in terms of what's going to be okay and what's not going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think those two sentencings this week, the Ghislaine Maxwell and the R. Kelly, like, it kind of like one punch, two punch, and it feels like a real victory, but also just so sad that it was allowed to go on for as long as it did.
So terribly sad. And unfortunately, we're staying with sad because I wanted to just quickly go over the enormous response from celebrities and people in the public eye to the Supreme Court's ruling to overturn Roe v. Wade. It was amazing to see artist after artist after artist at Glastonbury last weekend and other people in the public eye over the course of the last week make their feelings known in terms of Roe v. Wade and how strongly they feel about it. And, you know, I think it is significant that these people are speaking out. Like, I know some people would say, like, what difference does it make? But I think it does make a difference.
The reaction to this overturning of Roe v. Wade feels international to me, even though it's a US issue. It really feels really like the whole world, or most of the world that, you know, are in a position to kind of get head up about this, are really taking a stand. And it just so happens it coincided with Glastonbury and kind of a summer series of concerts across Europe and across kind of the world, really. And so we saw, I think probably the most viral one was Olivia Rodrigo, who brought Lily Allen on stage and they sang Fuck You, which is one of Lily's kind of seminal hits and really kind of suited this occasion. But Olivia Rodrigo, I think, is only maybe 19 or 20. She gave a really strong speech from the stage. She named the justices, the conservative justices on the US Supreme Court who had voted to overturn Roe v. Wade. And then there was Billie Eilish at Glastonbury, also was very outspoken. Phoebe Bridgers, who had spoken back in, I think it was December, the draft ruling on this issue was leaked. Mm. And I mean, everyone was kind of like, okay, the draft, it's not likely to change. So that's probably they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. And at that time, Phoebe Bridgers came out and said that she had had an abortion, I think, the previous October. Mm. And which was really brave of her. You know, it's when something like this happens, we see a lot of women kind of mining their traumas and saying, I did this and I did that and I had to go through this to show how important and how complex the issue of abortion is. We also had people like John Oliver, who's obviously very outspoken on his US TV show. I was looking for more instances of male celebrities speaking out. I think we had at Glastonbury, we had Kendrick Lamar, who he was quite outspoken about it. But I think there has been a little bit of backlash because even if you, on something like TikTok, you'll see a lot of female TikTok creators talking about this and in support of Roe v. Wade, but also calling out male creators for not being so outspoken as putting themselves forward as these liberal, left-leaning, you know, supporters of women, but then not saying a whole lot.
Yeah.
And then they'd be like, oh, we don't think it's our place to say it. And it's like, no, it is your place to say it. Abortion affects everyone.
Yeah, I saw someone just this morning saying, you know, it would be great to hear from the men whose lives have been improved by abortion, talking about the fact that their lives have been improved by abortion.
Yeah.
Because of course, that's the thing that has been said time and time again. Like these wealthy men in positions of power, you know, will still be able to access abortion. They'll still be able to get their girlfriends, mistresses, wives, whoever it is that they want. Abortions is never going to be an issue for them. And yet, you know, it's just the hypocrisy is just beyond.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's good to see people speaking out. I think it's good to see people in positions, you know, where they have a significant platform.
What I thought was really interesting actually was Meghan Markle. She had spoken previously in an interview for Vogue about the importance of choice and how her pregnancies had affected her and the things she'd been through. I think since then she's come out and said how Prince Harry was affected by the Roe v. Wade decision and how it kind of floored him. Why doesn't he come out and say that? But it's really interesting now that they're so removed from the monarchy that they are these kind of leading voices. I mean, they're not American, they're British. They live in Canada, I think.
Mm.
And
well, Meghan's American.
Meghan is American, yeah. But I thought that was quite interesting that they're quite leading, not leading, but I mean,
well, they are. Up there. They've become like, you know, leading progressives, which is kind of wild.
Yeah, it is kind of wild.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about something totally different.
Yes.
Because we are all collectively, women of a certain age, are losing our minds over the photos of Greta Gerwig's Barbie movie.
Yes. This looks incredible. Now, were you a Barbie girl?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You come on like a dream. Peaches and cream, lips like strawberry wine. You're Barbie. You're beautiful and you're mine. That's what the song on the cassette I got with my Barbie in 1988 sang.
This has brought back a little bit of, I won't call it childhood trauma. That's a bit over
well,
the top.
I also feel that way.
I only ever had one Barbie. And it was my first Barbie. And I think she's wearing a white dress with a pink bow in her hair. And
one Barbie?
One Barbie.
Did you want more?
I think so, yeah. I
don't Emer.
One Barbie. I grew up in a house with two older brothers, a lot of hand-me-downs and not a lot of money in the 80s. So
cruel.
So I only had one Barbie. So I'm a little bit like, well, I actually don't know a whole lot about Barbie, but I am still very excited. I coveted Barbies and I know, you know, I've bought a lot of Barbies. I have seven nieces, so I've bought a lot of Barbies in my time. But anyway, Greta Gerwig is directing this film about, it is the first ever live action feature film about Barbie, which I think is incredible. There's been a lot of TV shows and animation and this and that. When I first heard Greta Gerwig was the director, I was like, what? I mean, she's known for kind of, you know, indie hits that are mainstream, you know, and she did the most recent
Little Women.
Little Women.
That's probably the most mainstream film she's done, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And she obviously directed Lady Bird. She directed Saoirse and Lady Bird. Saoirse not appearing in the Barbie film, even though she is a Greta Gerwig
tragic
fave.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's Margot Robbie. I think it's Margot Robbie.
And
it's because Lindsay on Who Weekly always says Robbie.
Yeah,
I know. I also have that thing.
Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling are starring as Barbie and Ken, the main Barbie and Ken. And we saw pictures this week of them out rollerblading on Venice Beach in California.
The outfits are incredible.
You know that type of neon that doesn't look real?
Yes.
That's what it looks like they're wearing. The costume designer that Gerwig is working on, she's worked with her before. She worked on Little Women and she worked on Pride and Prejudice. I can't remember which version. So she has a lot of experience in period costume. And I guess you could say Barbie is period costume.
It's 100%.
You know, mainly 80s really is the look. And that they're obviously sticking to that kind of colour palette and that style.
And I think that's why it's so exciting, because Barbie, whatever about Ken, I never cared about Ken. But I mean, I like Ryan Gosling, but the Barbie that we've seen in these photos is the Barbie I played with / coveted, you know, in the 80s. Like, it's so exactly my era.
An image went viral online this week and someone had put the box of that particular skating Barbie side by side with the picture of Margot Robbie in her skating getup, and like it's pitch perfect.
I can't wait.
Another thing I found really interesting is, so obviously there are different I don't know if there are different versions of Barbie or she just has a lot of friends who have gotten increasingly more diverse. So I think diversity is going to be a big thing in this film. We have some trans actors that have been cast. We have a lot of actors of colour who have been cast. And I've read that a lot of them are going to be playing different versions of Barbie and Ken, which is really interesting.
I've also heard that Ken might be gay.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah. There was a scene, they were shooting a scene on the roller skates, and there was a video taken, and Ken lets out a scream that one of the gay men I follow said is a very clear signifier.
I would love
that. I'm not saying that. Evan Ross Katz is saying that.
Okay, well, Evan Ross Katz knows his stuff.
Exactly.
What else? I'm trying to think, what else do we know about this? Greta Gerwig wrote the screenplay with Noah Baumbach, who is her partner, but also writing partner.
Yeah.
So they have worked together before. I have a friend who has two little girls, and they are addicted to watching the Barbie series that are on Netflix, Netflix Kids. And she has sat down with them and watched plenty of episodes. And she said it is really funny, really emotionally complex, and that adults find it really like interesting as well. So that kind of gives me hope, a lot of hope that this is going, like, I can't really imagine what the storyline is going to be or who the audience is. Little girls? Is it?
No, I think it's us.
Is it little girls who have grown up? Is it?
Yeah, I think it's us. I mean, look, we'll see. But one way or the other, it's very exciting. And
it's,
I think,
really,
we're
exciting.
All going to need a few weeks off to process,
I think,
frankly.
Summer 2023 is when we're going to see
amazing.
It.
Okay, yeah. we've got a couple of more stories just to fly through.
Yeah.
So there's something going on with Travis Barker.
Oh, yeah. He has pancreatitis.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So pancreatitis can be caused by gallstones. Inflammation of the pancreas causes a lot of pain. So he was rushed to hospital in a lot of pain, stomach pain. I think it was yesterday or the day before. And, you know, there was a lot of drama because we didn't know what was going on. His daughter, who's 15, posted, like, please, God, help my dad. But, you know, she's 15. But it turns out, well, pancreatitis is a serious thing and causes a lot of pain. He's okay.
Okay.
He's not.
Great.
Yeah, he's not
okay.
So on
we don't
way
have
out.
To be worrying about Travis Barker.
No,
great.
No.
And then just to acknowledge that the Hocus Pocus 2 trailer came out this week.
More exciting movie news.
So exciting.
So it's coming this September, 30th of September.
That is so soon.
On Disney Plus. And the three are back. Sarah Jessica Parker, Bette Midler, and Kathy Najimy, who always, to me, is going to be Sister Mary Patrick. But I know to a lot of people, she is one of the Sanderson sisters.
Yeah.
It looks like they're kind of rehashing the same old story, like modern teenagers find the candle and the black flame and they release the Sanderson sisters again. Hopefully, I think some of these, it's not a remake, but it's kind of a remake. You know, it's a sequel. Some of them can fall a bit flat on their face, I think.
Yeah.
And when they're not getting I don't know if this is getting a cinematic release, but when they're going straight to streaming, sometimes it takes a little bit of the edge of excitement off. But I think there is going to be a lot of excitement about this.
Even just to see the sisters again.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even really matter. Like, if you get those three characters together, those three brilliant actors, you know, I mean, Bette Midler, iconic.
Iconic.
you know, you're going to have something magical.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
I liked that.
No matter what way you look at it. Okay, Imran McGlaisa, thank you so, so much. Just about time for me to go, but before I do have a few recommendations for you. This week, I was getting another session on a tattoo that I'm getting at the moment. It was 8 hours long, so a long tattoo session, but I have to say, I don't mind it at all. I actually kind of find it kind of peaceful. Camilla, who's doing my tattoos, she's really focused when she's actually working. Like she's lovely and like super chatty and stuff. But when she's working, she focuses and she doesn't really talk, which kind of suits me. It's nice and peaceful. I actually fell asleep, which I feel like is a testament to the fact that I have been overdoing it a little bit of late. But anyway, I wanted a good book to read. So I texted a friend for a recommendation, Sophie White. She is an author and she reads voraciously. And she is always someone I turn to for recommendations. And she recommended a book called Vladimir, which is by Julia May Jonas, which I started. I haven't finished it yet, but I started it during my tattoo and read loads of it. It is really sharp, really gripping, not a particularly taxing read. So if you're looking for something to kind of occupy a chunk of time like that, I really recommend it, Vladimir. It's about a woman in her 40s who's kind of living in the aftermath of some allegations that are made against her husband. They both work in a university and then another man comes into the picture. I don't want to say too much, but anyway, it's very good. In other news, obviously totally obsessed with the new Ultimate Girls Trip on Hey You. If you are not a Housewives fan, the news is they've started to do these series where they get together housewives from different franchises, so from different cities, and send them away on a trip for a couple of weeks or a week. In this case, I think it's 8 days, and just see what happens. And my God, it is just the stuff of dreams. The current one, so good. I didn't even know how much I missed Phaedra. And it turns out I'm really missing Phaedra. I want her back full time in Atlanta. So anyway, that's TV wise what I've been watching. And then listening wise, I have been listening to Muna and their new album, which is so good. If you're not familiar with Muna, M-U-N-A, they are extremely cool. Three people from LA. They make brilliant, brilliant music. Don't think they set out to make pop music, but that's what they're making. And it is top tier. Sing along in the car. Really enjoyable. Muna, get into them. And that's all I have for you this week. I will be back with you next week. I cannot wait to chat to you then. I hope you have a great one. In the meantime, if you felt like rating, subscribing, reviewing, all those kind of good things, telling a friend, maybe sharing on your social media, I will be so, so, so grateful. And I am eternally grateful to you for tuning in each week. I hope you have a good one. And if you can have a good one, I hope you stay safe. And I hope you know that you will get through whatever it is that's challenging you at the moment. Okay, big love.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.